Greetings. My name is Charles Xu, and I am appearing here as a writer and researcher with the Qiao Collective. We are a diaspora Chinese media collective that was formed in 2020 to challenge U.S.-led imperialist aggression against the People's Republic of China and to educate Western-left audiences about China's ongoing process of socialist construction and internationalist solidarity. As such, it's my distinct pleasure to join you all virtually to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic on October 1st, 1949. As we commemorate that event, which marked the culmination of one cycle of anti-imperialist resistance and augured the dawn of another, we also, of course, are approaching 1 year since the mass prison break known as Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, the subsequent year of Zionist genocide in Gaza, unparalleled in its depravity, is, as we well know, simply a continuation and intensification of a colonial process that predated even the Nakba of 1948. And it's notable that barely a year separated those two events in 1948 and 1949. One was the emphatic triumph of an organic people's war for self-determination in one of the world's oldest continually surviving civilizations. The other, the violent and anachronistic implantation of an alien settler colonial regime with no legitimate claims to an inch of Palestinian land. And since the United Nations General Assembly has just concluded right there in New York, affording, of course, a platform to the Hitlerite war criminal, Benjamin Netanyahu, it's worth noting that while the 1947 UN partition plan, in fact, midwifed the settler state of Israel into existence, that same UN went to war under US leadership against People's China just 2 years later, and continued to exclude it for another two decades. The Nakba and the founding of the PRC may have been separated in time by only a year, but geographically they were sundered by the entirety of the world's largest continent. However, that distance was no barrier to revolutionary pan-Asian solidarity. Indeed, as Chairman Mao told a visiting delegation of the Palestine Liberation Organization in 1965, quote, "Imperialism is afraid of China and of the Arabs. Israel and Formosa are bases of imperialism in Asia. You are the gate of the great continent, and we are the rear. They created Israel for you and Formosa for us. Their goal is the same." Now, the reason that delegation was received with state honors as early as 1965 was precisely because China was the first non-Arab country to recognize the PLO, and indeed was the most generous military sponsor and most strident diplomatic champion of the Palestinian cause throughout its first decade of organized armed struggle. Indeed, Yasser Arafat described China as, quote, "the biggest influence in supporting our revolution and strengthening its perseverance." And George Habash, the founder of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, described China as, quote, "our best friend." And indeed, through all the advances and reversals of the 1967 war, also known as the Nakba, of Black September in Jordan, the Lebanese Civil War, the First and Second Intifadas, and the capitulation at Oslo and the accompanying normalization of Zionism globally, China's contribution from that time, in fact, continues to reverberate today. Above all, we see this in the training that was received by earlier generations of Palestinian fighters in the theory and methods of asymmetric people's war against a technologically superior enemy backed by the global hegemon. These were methods that were informed and refined in the crucible of the Communist Party of China's own decades-long struggle against Kuomintang reaction, Japanese colonialism, and U.S. imperialism, culminating in the victory of 1949. These methods include, among others, the use of tunnel warfare, which propagated from China's war of resistance against Japan to Korea and Vietnam's wars of liberation from U.S. imperialism, and thenceforth, through direct training to Hezbollah and then to Hamas, as precisely the strategic depth that they need to withstand Israel's genocidal assaults on Gaza and now on Lebanon. At a broader political level, the CPC never forgot its history of United Front tactics. First, pausing hostilities to unite with the Kuomintang against Japanese colonialism, and then, after defeating Japan, allying with the KMT's own left wing and with other democratic forces against KMT rule itself. China was drawing precisely on this deep and historically informed understanding of national unity as a prerequisite to national liberation when it brokered the Beijing Unity Declaration between 14 Palestinian factions, including Fatah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and the PFLP this past July. Indeed, despite maintaining official ties with both Israel and the Palestinian Authority, the legacy of China's historical role has garnered sufficient trust from all parties involved to secure an agreement that simultaneously affirms the legitimacy of the PLO as a vehicle and the necessity for armed struggle as a method in the liberation of the Palestinian people. The Palestinians and their regional allies in the axis of resistance have, in fact, more than repaid China for these historical contributions. They've done so by broadcasting to the world their ingenious tactics of resistance to the Zionist onslaught, which have featured, among others, Chinese-made DJI drones, Hongjian 8 anti-tank missiles, Xiaomi mobile phones, and Hikvision cameras. In so doing, the Palestinians have revived anti-imperialist consciousness and popular interest among China's people in their own country's foundational history of people's war waged against similarly daunting odds. And here, I want to conclude by noting that the global solidarity movement has also done its part, even and especially right here in the heart of the Imperial Core, where the U.S. Student Intifada of April and May, which kicked off not far from here at Columbia University, drew innumerable comparisons among Chinese netizens to the May 4th movement of 1919. Now, like the recent Student Intifada, that movement too was initially quelled by the forces of reaction. But as my comrade Xiongjia of the Tricontinental Institute pointed out, it ultimately planted the seeds for the founding of a great revolutionary party just 2 years later, and its ultimate triumph in the founding of New China 3 decades on. And as we gather here to celebrate that event, let this be a reminder of how brutal and protracted the struggle will be, but also of how momentous the final victory that awaits us. Thank you so much.